Hey, Fitheads, welcome to another episode of Sharing Our Pairings. This is Sharing Our Pairings, episode 76, Liga Maestro, and Lightweights versus Heavyweights. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon, broadcast around the world on the Armed Forces Radio Network, and of course on CigarFederation.com, and of course, every podcast device that exists in the universe. If you found somehow a podcast device that we're not transmitted on, let me know, but there's just no way. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Robbie Rass. Rob, what's going on in sunny California today, brother?
It's beautiful, man. Day off, nice little breeze. We're in the high 70s. I did have to go out since we decided we were going to do this show, and obviously we're recording on a different date. I had baseball yesterday, so I couldn't get out of that. I had to run and pick up some beers on the lighter side. I remember when we did this cigar before, and we had Claudio on as a master blender and president of Mombacho Cigars. He paired with Pilsners, and I'll be damned if I had a Pilsner in my fridge. So
nice.
So I had to go pick up, and I picked up a few different things. I actually got one Pilsner, but these are three beers that I have not had before. So I'm excited, and to one that's apparently very, very new, and we'll get into that. But no, I'm excited. I love this Liga Maestro, dude. This cigar is fantastic. I'm getting a little bit. I just lit up, as you can see. I mean, we're just getting started. And getting that nice spice right up front on the tongue.
Yeah.
Not overpowering. It's almost like more of a peppercorn flavor than like a really crushed pepper spice. But really, really nice right up front. And getting some leathery notes out of there as well. This one's going to smooth out, I know, as we get about, I don't know, within the next 10, 15 minutes, it's going to smooth out. So I'm looking forward to it. And I'm just happy to be back, man. I look forward to doing the show every week. We've been on kind of a beer kick. I'm a beer guy. Although I started jogging yesterday.
I saw that.
To try to negate
not
some
die of, from a heart attack?
Yeah, to negate some of my beer intake. And I'll tell you, my lower half is...
need some beer for a kill.
Yeah. I'm hoping medicinal? That a couple of beers will loosen things up. Man, my legs are tight, man. But no, it feels good. It feels good to get out and do something because we live such sedentary lifestyles, and
yep.
Feel like I really need to make an effort to get out and be a little bit more active.
Got to get that foam roll on, brother. Right after the run, get that foam roll on. It hurts so good, as they say.
Oh, for like stretching out your back and everything?
Oh, yes. Back. Like I, every time I go for a run, because, you know, I'm an old dude, I have to get my foam roll on immediately after for my calves and my hammies, because if I don't, like, and I just leave it, I will not be walking the next day. It's not good.
That's bad times for everybody, man. You've got some dark, dark beers. We're hitting this from we're jumping from very different platforms today.
I would say that I'm going to float like a butterfly, sting like a bee, but really I'm going to float like a butterfly and crash like a tank. Because once I get through these beers, I'm going to be lit up. And what a great night, because we've got a doubleheader going on tonight. We're starting out with Sharing Our Pairings, and then we're going to finish it up with Cigar Chat with Gurkha Cigars. That'll be a little bit later tonight. That'll be a lot of fun. But, of course, we're talking about the Liga Maestro in Nicaraguan Puro. Previously only available in Europe and Italy, and they brought it back. They brought it back to the States. I really love the band. I mean, it's just, you know, it's kind of one of the, we don't talk a lot about bands, but it's elegant and it's a little understated. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's simple, class. And of course, I'm a little bit further in because I started up. I was eager to smoke today. I've been working hard, and it's just, the cigar has such a great savoriness to it. You know, it's like, Claudio's palate, he just blends to sort of go around your entire tongue. You get a little saltiness, you get a little savoriness, you get a little sweetness, and then, you know, as you get about halfway down the cigar, you'll get a little bit of sour quality. It's kind of got everything, and the rest has certainly helped these. These have been sitting since he originally sent the samples, which was a couple months ago, and I'm kind of excited to see what the other cigars do in another month or two.
Yeah, and we're smoking different sizes too. It looks like you've got like a Robusto there, I think.
Yeah, it's like a Robusto Grande because it's like a 5x54.
Okay, I think I'm working on a Lonsdale here,
or like a
Corona Extra or something like that. I'm not exactly sure what size.
Oh, that's right, because he sent us different sizes.
Yeah. So this was the first. I know I've got a few of them in there. This was the first one I grabbed. So yeah, I'll be curious to see how the different sizes perform.
So let's get after it, because you know we got two shows to do tonight, and no time like the present. So as you can see, Rob wasn't kidding. I'm getting right after it. We got the darkness. Although can't say if I had been paying attention to our previous shows, I probably wouldn't have picked this up. But whatever, we're going with it. It's the Salted Caramel Stout by Breakside Brewery. It sounds good. It's a stout brewed with salt and caramel. Sounds good. A little bit about Breakside. Rob kind of talked about the Breakside a little couple episodes ago, but they were opened in 2010 in Northeast Portland, and they started as a restaurant and pub brewery. In 2013, they expanded to Milwaukee, and then in 2016, this year, they're opening a new brew pub in Northwest Portland in the Slabtown neighborhood. Very exciting. A little bit about the Salted Caramel Stout. 7.9% ABV, although I think my sample, because it is a artisanal product, this is actually 6.7. So I think 7.9 is maybe a different pour or just a previous release. 33 IBUs, so pretty light on the IBU scale, which is surprising for a stout. And then for malts, they use a lot of malts. They use two-row, chocolate, flaked barley, black malt, Munich, crystal. For hops, Newport, that's it. And that explains why the IBUs are so low. They say it's a collaboration with salt and straw ice cream. They add sea salt and caramel to the wort before fermentation, and there you go. And to be honest, we kind of talked about this, I think when you had this beer a couple shows ago, you found it sickeningly sweet, overwhelmingly sweet. I am getting a very different experience. I describe this off air as really that saltiness you get like from an Islay whiskey. Like it's so salty. It's just running over my palate. I'm going to have to let the beer warm up, because I'm not really getting any other notes from this beer other than just this intense upfront saltiness, which doesn't make any sense. So I'm gonna take some more sips, and I'll let you talk about what you got on your lineup tonight.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of that beer. For me, it was just cloyingly sweet, just way over the top. And even my wife even thought it was a bit too sweet. I know that some guys will get a couple of different beers and like mix them together and just get kind of weird with it. If I had another one of those in the fridge, I'd crack that open with maybe more like a Baltic porter, something that's got a bit more earthiness to it, and mix them together and see if that would help things along. But that's not really part of my game. I don't really get into that. But anyway, my first beer on the very opposite end of the spectrum here is the Cali Coast Kolsch Style Ale. And it's from Cali Craft Brewing, which is located in Walnut Creek, right down the street from me. They've been around since 2012. They are in the process of opening up a new location right around the corner from me, actually, and a tasting room and everything. So their website's getting revamped. So there's not a whole lot of information about this beer specifically. It's been on Beer Advocate. It's got a handful of people that have reviewed it, 17 reviews. It gets its average score there, I guess, is an 85, which falls into the very good category. The thing that I thought was interesting, when you pull it up on ratebeer.com, and they have the two different style or two different scores. They have the overall score and the style score. John and I both assume this is the way that what that means, but the overall score, the style score for the Cali Coast and the Kolsch Style Ale is a 92. So you think that's pretty damn good, right? And the overall score is a 56. So it's kind of...
Something's not right, Lucy.
it's kind of... I guess, but actually what we said was it makes a little bit of sense, because a Kolsch-style ale is, I guess, maybe similar to like a... It's probably very similar, a lot of corollaries, to like a Connecticut cigar. A very simple, like a Macanudo Connecticut that, there's those guys who go in, they buy their box every month, and that's the only thing they smoke.
Macanudo.
Kolsch-style ale is very—it's similar to a pilsner, which is similar to an American lager, and there you go. An American lager is Budweiser, so it's a very light beer in color. It's got a real nice aroma on it, actually, kind of fruity, maybe like a pear or guava type note on the top there. Kind of that more sweeter fruit as opposed to like a astringent tart citrus. And it is, it's made with California-grown barley, 4.8% alcohol by volume. So everything about this beer says it's drink it at the beach, drink it on a hot day, that kind of thing. I haven't had it before, so I'm excited to give this a shot. But I'm curious to see how our pairings are going to differ, man. And I'm getting a lot more spice out of this cigar than I normally do.
Nice.
And it's a 6x46 is the size. And the I can't remember what it was called, but 6x46.
It's not the Mambachito, it's something else.
Yeah. Anyway. So I'm going to jump in and get a couple of pulls on this and see how the pairing goes.
Well, interestingly, you know, in a world that's backwards, this cigar is running this stout over all day long. So I'm getting, like I said, initial saltiness out of the stout. I do get some caramel on the nose, but the intense sweetness that you were describing, I'm really not getting that at all. In fact, and I don't know if it's a temperature issue or maybe I just got a bad sample, but there's no stout quality to it. I'm not getting rich malty notes. I'm not getting rich chocolatey notes. I'm not getting any coffee notes. It's like I get saltiness and then I'm tasting beer, which I can tell is a stout, but it just has no body to it whatsoever. So much so that, like I said, this cigar is just running it right over. So while the beer is nice on the palate in terms of the mouthfeel, there's no flavor profile there to do anything for this cigar. So the cigar, I can taste everything in the cigar. The cigar is running it over for days. I do get that little bit of leather. I mean, it's kind of the nice thing in this Liga Maestro and a lot of different Mambacho cigars. They have a bunch of different flavors. And here, leather, and the leather just stays. I take a sip of the beer, the leather's still there. So what a letdown, unfortunately. And like I said, could just be the sample I got. But, if you're getting sickeningly sweet and I'm getting the opposite, it makes me wonder how consistent this beer is. And like I said, who knows? It could be a bad sample. Who knows how the beer got up here and how long it sat and what it sat in the right conditions. And I'm going to make every excuse because, I just can't imagine we get really polar opposite flavors from this beer. And it's polar opposite.
Yeah, you keep saying sample, and that tells me that they gave it to you. This isn't a sample.
Of course,
you bought
this
it.
This isn't a sample. it's from the Cigar Surgeon pocket of sample.
Yeah.
As with all our beverages.
Copy that.
Yeah, it comes out of my pocket, which up in Canada here, not cheap. I think that ran me $8. I think my average spend for the beers tonight was about $8.75. So
that's not too bad. That's not too bad though when you're talking about a stout bomber like that. Yeah. I was on the cheaper side because again, we're going with the Kolsch styles, the Pilsners, and I've got a session IPA. But I was lucky enough to get individual cans, which is one thing that I love about Monument Liquors in Walnut Creek. Or I beg your pardon, is it Concord or Walnut Creek? I think it might be Concord. I'm not sure. I love that I can just go in and buy. I was absolutely positive that this Cali Coast was a beer that I wanted to have for the show because I'd seen it around and never tried it. And it's local, so I like to drink local. It's actually really good. The pairing is, it's working kind of as a palate cleanser. You know, I'm getting, there's that little bit of fruit on the front of the beer, and it's a sweeter fruit, and I want to say like a pear style, but it doesn't have a pear flavor, or almost like a peach style, but it doesn't have a peach flavor. It's just got maybe like a cantaloupe almost, if that makes sense. It's kind of that creamy sweet fruit flavor with a nice crisp finish. And it's not too heavy, but it's not too light either. There's definitely a lot of flavor here. And I feel like every time I go and I puff on the cigar, I'm hitting it with a fresh palate. I'm getting that blast of pepper that's actually starting to die away a little bit, getting a lot more of those rich notes than I'm expecting. I'm waiting for that sugar cane to pop up, that sugar cane note that I was picking up before in when I did this review like a year and a half ago. I know the blend has changed a little bit, but not too much. Waiting for that to kick in. But once that pops up and mix that with the sweetness that you've got here and the crisp value of the beer itself, I think we could be working with a pretty good pairing. Now, is it the type of pairing where it's bringing out these extra flavors in the beer and extra flavors in the cigar? No. But I think you can kind of expect that when you go with something like a Pilsner or a Kolsch style ale. So, it's good. It's not great, but it's kind of a nice summer day like we're having today pairing. It works out really well.
Just a reminder to our audience, you're tuned in to Sharing Our Pairings, episode 76, Liga Maestro and Lightweights versus Heavyweights. We're pairing the Liga Maestro from Mambacho with some beers. Rob's gone lightweight. I've gone heavyweight. Getting very different pairing experiences. Thanks very much to all our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners out there. Wherever you are in the world, thanks for tuning in. So I am I'm ready to move on already. I mean, normally, you know, I'd give the first beer maybe 20, 25 minutes, but it's not working for me. And it's not working for me on many levels. There's, you know, I want a stout and I want character and I'm not getting any of that. I'm really disappointed. So to sort of take away that disappointment, I'm going with something which it can't go wrong from Stone Brewing. It's the Bitter Chocolate Oatmeal Stout. It's their anniversary series. Everything about this description piques my interest. Bitter chocolate, yes, please. Oatmeal stout, forget about it. And Stone Brewing, which, you know, continuously for me, I puts out good stuff. There's no funkiness. There's no, you know, like I enjoy a good Rogue beer, but Rogue tends to kind of experiment, and some of their experiments don't really work out for me. Stone, on the other hand, consistently good. We've featured Stone a million times, but just a reminder that they were founded by Greg Koch and Steve Wagner in San Diego, California, in 1996, and they have risen to be the 10th largest craft beer brewery in the world. They specialize in locally grown small farm ingredients, which, you know, it's kind of cool, I guess. A little bit about this beer. It's an Imperial Stout, 9.2%, so it's a bit of a heater, 55 IBUs, which is kind of where I expect the bitterness to be with an Imperial Stout. For hops, they're using Summer, Williamette, Galena, and Atanamon. Atanamon, some kind of funky hop.
It's actually Willamette.
Oh, Willamette.
Mm-hmm.
Willamette.
Named for the valley that it's grown in.
Oh, okay, so Summit Willamette is pretty. I mean, we see that a lot out of California breweries, and of course they use loads of cocoa and roast. It's got loads of cocoa and roast malt character, elements of anise and coffee, and. What I really love about Stone, and please never change, they've got about a million pairings on their page. They've got dessert pairings, they've got appetizer pairings, they've got food pairings, and cigar pairings. Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. So they recommend Padron 3000, EP Carrillo. It's specifically EP Carrillo La Historia E3. Those are kind of in the same ballpark as what we're smoking tonight, I think. So props to Stone for that kind of recommendation. That's fantastic. And as you can see, I mean, this is, you know, dark and thick. It pours like motor oil. It's got a little bit of a head on it. And I'm expecting this to kind of make up for my disappointing experience with my first beer. So while I take some sips and recoup my palate, why don't you talk about your second beer?
Well, I can tell you that beer will bring your palate back to life because that beer is fantastic. And I don't know if I've featured it on the show before. I know I've had it a few times. Maybe I haven't featured it on the show, but I have had it a few times. A couple more things about this Cali Craft beer that I'm having. A little bit more about Cali Craft. They've got about, I don't know, about 20, 25 beers that they've produced. They've got some standards that are the Cali Coast is one of their standards. The Oaktown Brown and the Bays are double IPA. They've got a wit, wild wit, and a bunch of different things. They've got some sours that they're doing as well. So kind of an up-and-coming brewery. Again, like I said, right down the street from me. So pretty cool. One thing that I picked up at the brewing class I took at UC Davis, where I also learned that we were saying Willamette incorrectly, Kolsch beer. So it's much like to be a Scotch, it can only be made in Scotland. To be an actual Kolsch, to be called a Kolsch, it has to be from Köln, Germany. And I believe that's how you say it. K-O with an umlaut, L-N. I believe it's Köln.
But you say it umlaut.
Umlaut, I beg your pardon. I like umlaut.
That's fair.
I don't know. It just umlaut just sounds like a lazy person to me. I don't know why. Anyway, moving forward. So that's why you'll see on this particular one, it's a Kolsch style ale. So they can't actually call it a Kolsch unless... Because the water characteristics from Köln, Germany are very, very specific. And they're very different from any other place in the world, which is why this is mainly where this type of beer, and to get that particular type of flavor, comes from that area. If you're brewing outside of that area, you got to add all kinds of salts and things to your brew to get everything in the right place to be able to brew a style of beer that's going to have that same kind of flavor.
So it's kind of like terroir for beer, really. You're talking about the characteristics of the water, which is the core ingredient.
Oh, absolutely. Love that sound. Crack a cold one. So my second beer, and this one, again, like for the second week in a row, right, I had to call the brewery to get some information. This time I didn't call the brewer's cell phone. I called the actual brewery. And he never did call me back, by the way. Just didn't really expect him to. But I did leave him a voicemail. I'm going with the Japanica Pils from Uncommon Brewers. And this is a lager brewed with ginger and wasabi root.
Say what?
And the name Japanica is, I think that's the technical name for wasabi root.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like that's the scientific name. I don't know what
that.
Yeah, that's what the guy on the phone told me. So I'm sticking with that. Uncommon Brewers has been around for a while, and I've actually got all the wrong information pulled up, so we're just going to stick with that. The Japanica Pils is a Czech-style Pilsner brewed with ginger and fresh wasabi root. This is from their website. It's the only information that they had, and he admittedly said that their website was woefully out of date. So we had a delicious balance between the Pilsner malt body, grassy bohemian hops, and subtle mustard heat of the wasabi on the finish. Look for it at your local store starting next week, and that was in January. So it's been out since January. The funny thing is, the first place I always go to for information is beeradvocate.com, and I found this Japanica on Beer Advocate, and it was added to Beer Advocate on 7/7/2016, which, if you look at your calendar, happens to be today. So I thought that was kind of funny. Beyond that, I have very little information on the beer itself. Let me pull up their website and give you some more information. It was brewed to be enjoyed fresh. Store in a cool place and enjoy soon. So not something that you want to keep around. They're Uncommon Brewer, sorry, is in Santa Cruz, California. So I'm going to give this a pour, and that's got kind of an interesting color to it. I don't know if you can tell.
Ooh, that's, look, yeah.
It's kind of funky, right?
Like, it is funky.
You can see the Kolsch.
Yeah, it's like the color you don't want your tap water to be.
Yeah, it's almost got kind of a, like a dirty rust color to it, which is interesting. The nose is very interesting as well. This one's going to be interesting. Let me pull up their website here. John, talk a little bit about your beer while I do that.
Roger that. So I think I might have made some technical errors tonight. I'm not sure stouts were necessarily the way to go. This stout, by the way, fantastic. Talk a little bit about the flavor characteristics here. Tons of chocolate. Just tons of chocolate. And not that overly cloyingly sweet chocolate, which is nice because, you know, chocolate, the essence of chocolate is not sweetness. The essence of chocolate is a little bit of bitterness, and high cocoa chocolate is really high quality chocolate. So I'm used to tasting high quality chocolate, high cocoa chocolate, and this definitely has quality chocolate in it. It does well with the oatmeal stout. I kind of expected it to, because chocolate, I think, would be a natural pairing with an oatmeal stout. So the oatmeal stout gives it that girth of flavor. And the chocolate kind of carries it through, and then it finishes with that little bit of bitter, a little bit of sweet, and it's nice. Unfortunately, neither one of these stouts is really going well with this cigar, and I feel that, like I said, I think I've made a tactical error here tonight going with these big, big stouts, and it's not because they're running the cigar over. Far from it. In fact, this cigar, this Liga Maestro, is absolutely the heavyweight category for strength, body, because it's standing up to the quote-unquote technical punches from these stouts. In fact, more like I would say the cigar is the Muhammad Ali, and these stouts are just getting, you know, the stouts of the Joe Frazier, they're just getting slapped around the ring, just to throw boxing out there. I just don't think that, you know, I was thinking that the stouts would be complementary, but in fact I'm finding these stouts to be contrasting, which is so strange to me, because I would have figured that they would be very complementary, and I'm not finding that at all. So while I'm enjoying the stout, while I'm enjoying the cigar, they're on the opposite end of the spectrum, and it sort of remains to be seen whether they're going to pair well together, whether they're going to pull anything out of this cigar, or whether the cigar is going to pull anything out of the stout. I think I need a couple more sips while you maybe talk about your second beer again tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of a bummer that one's not working out. A little bit more about Uncommon Brewers, and again, I'm going with the Japanica Pils, lager brewed with ginger and wasabi. It's actually quite good. They're in Santa Cruz, California, which is about, I don't know, about an hour and a half away from me. And they've been around, it looks like, since 2008. And they were started by Alex Stefanski. And he started brewing with his college roommates in 1996.
There you go.
So there you go.
Success story right there.
So yeah, he's been doing it since 96. Created a different kind of brewery again. Began all the way back in 2002. So what did I say? 2008? No, they've been around since 2002. So they've been around for a while. According to beeradvocate.com, they currently have 12 beers available.
Beers.
And 8 archives. So just going through some here, they've got an American Special Bitter that is 14% ABV. Wow. Bacon Brown Ale, a Baltic Porter. They've got a Blonde Ale. Japanica is the one that I'm having. They've got a Triple, another American Porter, Amber, a Double, a Quadruple, and a California Common. So some interesting styles there. Not one IPA.
Interesting.
Good for them. Not one IPA.
Bucking the trend.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to talk a little bit more about the beer itself, it is 5.2%. So again, not very high alcohol, and I still can't get over the color. It's just kind of funky. But it's got a nice flavor to it. And I was expecting the wasabi to be kind of a big hit, but you really just kind of feel it on the finish. There's kind of like a little bit of heat on the finish. The ginger is in there, and there's kind of a more rounded, fruity quality in there too, and it's kind of hard to put a finger on it, but it's quite good. The pairing is almost the same as the last one. I mean, they're very different beers, but flavor profile anyway. But they're both just acting as a palate cleanser, and I get to enjoy the beer on its own. Really, take a couple of sips of beer, and I can enjoy that. Take a couple of puffs of the cigar and enjoy that. It's very separate. There's not a lot of crossover in flavor. There's not a lot being enhanced one way or the other. I'm getting a lot of the same notes that I was getting out of the cigar to begin with. That the heat that I was getting at the beginning, that black pepper heat has cooled down a little bit. Still get that peppercorn type of note, which is a little bit different for this cigar. But I'm starting to get that little bit of sweetness out of there. More of a rich, well-rounded, fuller profile of flavor is coming through. And the beer, really, it's a perfect sitting on the beach kind of pairing. It's not too, you don't have to think about it too much. And each one stands on its own, and there's not a lot of crossover in flavor. So it's not bad, but it's not great. But it's just kind of a good summertime pairing.
I'm surprised, given that it's got ginger and wasabi, because when you said ginger and wasabi, I was like, oh, your palate's just going to get shocked all over the place. So it's interesting. I mean, obviously, that just goes to show the quality of brewing that they've managed to produce this beer with two, you know, components that are quite strong in terms of flavor profile and make it very balanced in a Kolsch style. That's cool.
Yeah, it's, well, excuse me, this one's a Pilsner. Pilsner style, I guess, is what, well, they call it a Pilsner, so I'll go with that. But, yeah, the adjuncts are really, they're secondary in flavor. It's like, if you were to get like a Young's Double Chocolate Stout, right? You expect to be whopped over the head with chocolate, but you really don't. It's in there, but it's not overbearing. It's the same thing here. I get that ginger right up front, and it's interesting because ginger is really the palate cleanser, right? So, I get that ginger right up front, but it's surrounded by there's a fruity aspect to it. There's a savory aspect to it. And then there's a little bit of heat, just that little flash of heat on the finish, and that might be more placebo than anything. It's really quite tasty. I'm surprised when I picked it up. I was just really looking. I had been in the shop for a while, and I saw all the standard pilsners, the stuff that's actually from Germany. I thought, well, maybe I'll grab one of those. No, I don't want to do that because I want to do something a little bit different. And this was the next one that I saw, and I just figured, screw it, it's a pilsner, I'll grab it. And then I realized that it had ginger and wasabi after I got home. So the ginger and the wasabi was not the selling point for me, but it actually is a pretty good beer. They had four or five different offerings from Uncommon Brewers at the shop. I only grabbed this one in the 16-ounce can, the pint-sized can. I might go back and try some of the other ones just on the strength of this particular beer because there's a lot of flavor going on. And I feel like if I had it without the cigar, I'm going to get even more of that. So, yeah, again, it's the exact kind of pairing that you would really expect when you're going with something that's got the effervescence this does. It's got a little bit of ginger in there. It's going to kind of cleanse that palate. The flavor up front is nice. The finish is crisp. It's very, very enjoyable, and the pairing is working out pretty well.
Nice. Well, just a reminder to the audience, you are tuned in to Sharing Our Pairings, episode 76, Liga Maestro, and Lightweights versus Heavyweights. Doing some beer pairing today. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon, joined as always with my co-host, Robbie Rass. Thanks to all our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners, wherever you are in the world. Hope you had a chance to enjoy the Independence Day celebrations just a few days ago. We're talking about this Liga Maestro, and I mean, what a phenomenal cigar. It's kind of becoming par for the course for Mombacho. I think I kind of enjoy everything they put out. I think, as to coin a phrase, it's like pizza. Even if you had bad pizza, it's still good. And I find that with Mombacho, they really don't make a bad cigar. So even a cigar that they blend that's maybe not to my palate, I still enjoy it. It still takes me around the palate threshold of my flavor map. So I'm enjoying it. This one, on the other hand, is just fantastic. It's a great cigar. It's activating all the different flavor centers of my tongue. I'm kind of in the halfway point now, so I'm getting a little bit of that sour quality. So it's kind of contrasting against some of the saltiness from the stout, getting a little bit of that savoriness on the tongue. And it's got a great creamy mouthfeel to it. So the smoke, and you know, I don't really talk about this a lot in reviews, but the smoke is very satisfying. You take a draw on it, kind of roll the smoke around in your mouth. There are some cigars out there that don't give you a thick, satisfying smoke, as it were. It's a very thin smoke. Here, not the case. It's a very satisfying smoke. So I find when I get that, I don't draw on the cigar as much. It can kind of sit, which is really better, because you want your cigar to smoke as cool as possible. Talking a little bit about this bitter chocolate oatmeal stout from Stone. Great beer. Love it. Just not the pairing. I think I really erred in pairing tonight. I think I've kind of gone where no pairing has gone before, and I've kind of stress this as far as I could go, and I just don't think that perhaps stouts are the way to go with the Liga Maestro. The beer is great, the cigar is great, but together they're not making wonderful music for me.
Yeah, when the master blender says Pilsner, I go Pilsner, man.
He might know what he's talking about.
He just might. Yeah, I'm like I said, I'm digging this pairing. It's working out really well. I think that this type of blend is, when I think about different types of pairings that I would want to do with this cigar, I mean, I know we did whiskey last time, and there were some good pairings there. I mean, obviously, based on your experience, I wouldn't want to go with stouts. I almost wonder if maybe like a brown ale.
I could see a brown ale being interesting. You were talking last week about a coffee brown ale, and I think that might be interesting.
I think another style of beer that would work well. I think Belgians would work well with this. just about any kind of Belgian. And I almost decided to go with Belgians at the last minute because they had a bunch of the Trappist stuff in, and I figured, you know, I never really buy this stuff, and I know I like it. Excuse me, but I did not pull the trigger. Maybe next time. But some of the maybe more German styles too. When, I mean, obviously, Kolsch is a German style, Pilsner is German style, but if you jump into like an Oktoberfest style beer in the Marzens and that kind of thing, there might be some interesting pairings there as well.
Maybe even a Saison.
Yeah, and I'm coming around on Saisons with that flavor profile. There's some interesting stuff. There's one out from Modern Times. I swear to God, Modern Times could make like just a dirt flavored beer, and I think I would love it. I everything that they make, I've had one beer from them that I didn't like, and it's just because I'm not a huge fan of the real danky IPAs. Mm-hmm. They had one that was super danky, and I didn't like it. But they've got a grape saison that's out now, and it's fantastic. I had it at the Sierra Nevada Beer Camp Festival, and I really enjoyed it. And it's only out for a month, so I think I'm going to grab a couple. The other day, I had a Mega Fruit Islands, or Mega whatever the hell it's called, Mega something or other, and it's a double IPA version of one of their regular IPAs, and it was released in December.
That's so a this long is time for an IPA.
It's been sitting in my fridge since December. I had no idea I even had it, and I think my wife bought it for me. And the bottle looks very similar to their one of their gozas. They have an apricot goza, and I know that I bought that, so the bottles look very similar. So I think I saw this one in the back and just assumed it was the apricot goza, and I wasn't going to have that particular day or whatever. totally in the back of the fridge. I cracked it open, and it was great. 6 months old.
That's impressive.
And I'm thinking, man, I wish I would have had this when it was fresh, because then there would have been so much. It was really, really juicy. So I think that if I were to have it when it was fresh, there'd definitely have been more hop aroma, more hop flavor. But I really enjoyed it. So yeah, everything that they do is awesome. We do have one audience question. You want to jump into that now?
I do, and it's from Bob Dog. And Bob Dog, thanks very much for supporting the show with the questions. We really appreciate it. Bob Dog wants to know, do you think the Liga Maestro is better suited to whiskey pairings or heavy-duty beer pairings? Well, I think we've kind of gotten our answer so far. I mean, you know, Claudio said it himself. He kind of envisioned pairing it with a lighter Pilsner-style ale, and that's, I mean, who better to get that information from than the guy that blended the cigar? I think this cigar would be really good with a port. I think port, because really what we're looking at here is, instead of that intense malty character that you get from a stout, more of the, and Rob kind of talked about it a little bit, like a Belgian triple, where you're getting more of that fruity character, and I think a port would be really good. The whiskey went really well, and I think rum would go really well, because you're dealing with something that's a little bit less intense. It's not just destroying your palate. I mean, definitely kudos to the cigar that it could pair with a variety of different beverages. I think Rob probably knocked it out of the park with a Pilsner pairing. I think I would definitely reapproach this Liga Maestro with Japanese whiskey. I think would be a no-brainer. Port would be a no-brainer. What are your thoughts on the pairing styles that would go with a Liga Maestro?
I'm thinking that maybe even a Hefeweizen. You could go with like a German Hef or an American style Hef, or wit beers, that kind of thing. Would work out well. That's especially when we just did, was a couple weeks ago, and had that belt when I was doing some of the wit beers. The Allagash White has that nice Belgian fruitiness to it. I think that something like that, it's a bit more on the brighter side.
Yeah.
And I think that would pair really well. I'm curious about my next pairing, because it's so far from what I was drinking before. So we'll see how an IPA, this is a session IPA, but it smells pretty strong. So we'll see how that works.
I'm hoping this is the last beer I've got, and I'm really hoping this draws out what I'm hoping I was going to get out of these pairings. So a couple weeks ago, I think it was episode 73, I had one of these bad boys. This is the Ola Dub from Harvest Town, aged in Highland Park X whiskey casks. I think I had the 16 year in the last show, and this is the big bad boy. This is the 18 year. This is a phenomenal beer. I think I rated this beer 5 stars out of 5. If I could give it 5.25 out of 5, I probably would. You can see it's nice and dark and rich. On the nose, just gobs and gobs of whiskey character. I talked about Harvest Town Brewery, but I'll talk a little bit more about them again. Founded in 1983. In 2007, they partnered with Highland Park to use their casks in a 6-month maturation process. This is 8% ABV, so another step up. You can actually get this from the cask and keg, which sounds really interesting, because it's 10.5% if you get it poured from the cask and keg. 40 IBUs, which, again, that's kind of a little light. I would expect most stouts to be in the 50-plus IBU character, so it's a little light on the IBUs. For hops, they use Galena, East Kent, Goldings, and Fuggles. Very European style. They say that the nose in this is berries, oak, caramel, and for sure, I mean, that Highland Park caramel character is coming through in gobs. They say on the palate, it's nutty, creamy brown sugar with a touch of spice. They say that what's interesting is the maturation process. They take their old engine oil stout, which, I mean, if you're going to name a stout anything, old engine oil, that just gets your head where it needs to be for a stout.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And it starts out its life at 10.5%, and then they age it for up to 6 months. So it's not a hard and fast rule, because the brewmaster will taste it along the way and determine at what point it's ready. So, of course, they have the 12, the 16, and the 18, and that directly refers to the age of the Highland Park cask. So Highland Park 12, Highland Park 16, Highland Park 18. This, of course, is the Bad Boy 18. And what's interesting is this was bottled in February of 2015, and they say it's good until February of 2018. No doubt. I would suspect that this beer is something you could lay down if you're the kind of guy that wants to cellar something. I think this would cellar really well, and the flavors would marry really well. Again, just, I mean, tons of creme brulee caramel sweetness, like a toasted caramel off the nose. And I'm really hoping that this saves my pairings for the night. I'm going to take some sips here while you talk about your third beer, which is definitely moving things out of your pairing comfort zone for the night.
Yeah, a little bit. I'm curious about that beer too, man, that you're drinking. So for my third and final pairing, I'm going with a down-to-earth session IPA from 21st Amendment. Now, you guys know my my feeling about session beers, and I'm coming around on that that whole idea. I mean, the beer doesn't have to be doesn't have to have a ton of alcohol in it to be enjoyable. I think I just don't like the name session because I don't know. It signifies that you need to drink a bunch of it, and I don't think that's necessary. But that's neither here nor there. The down-to-earth session IPA from 21st Amendment. They are from San Francisco. 4.4% ABV, 42 IBUs, so it's not super bitter for an IPA. They've got, and kudos to 21st Amendment, they know what they're doing with their website. There's a ton of information here. They don't really do a lot with the pairings, and they don't break much into flavor profile. They kind of leave that up to you, but they do give all the information that you're going to want. Flavor hops, Cascade and Mosaic, definitely taste the Mosaic in there. Malts, Golden Promise, it's going to be their base malt. Munich Light for a little bit of color, as you can see. This one has a little bit of color to it. Kind of a, I don't know what the SRM on this would be, like a 9 maybe. More of a, like a light amber almost. Not much of a head on this thing at all, as you can see. There's very little going on. Now that could be from maybe leftover soap that was in my cup there as well. Like I said, Munich Light for a little bit of color, Crystal 45, a little bit more color, a little bit of flavor. Caramel is all mouthfeel. Pale gold is the color. Their bittering hops use Warrior. Warrior is one of those hops that is, that's, I was actually wondering about this beer because I looked and it seems that it's only been around since 2015. And a Warrior hop is relatively new. And it's got such a high, high alpha acids that the bitterness from that hop is, it's like 20%, which when you go into like a Cascade, it's like 4 or 5. So that's why I usually don't see Cascade as too much of a bittering hop because there's not a lot of bitterness there. But oddly enough, there's not a ton of bitterness in this beer either. So they probably didn't use a ton of it, but that's the nice thing about a high alpha acid hop. You can use half as much hops to get the same amount of bitterness as something with lower alpha acid. And basic ale yeast. Down to Earth won a silver medal in the Session IPA category at the 2016 World Beer Cup. So yes. That's saying something. But again, 21st Amendment, right down the street from me, been around since 2000. Started by Nico Frisia, I think. Or it might be Nico. Nico Frisia. Nico, if I mispronounce your name, I apologize. And Sean O'Sullivan in San Francisco. They're like 3 blocks away from the ballpark. And they go back, Nico and Sean go back to like 1995. They met in San Francisco, blah, blah, blah. That's their story. Oh, they went to, while sitting together in a summer class on brewing at UC Davis.
There it is.
That's funny. I took that class. I'm right behind you guys. So was that 2000? So that's 15 years ago. So yeah. So in my, looks like
2018.
I'm going to spend my 50s making beer, man.
Nice. That's a good way to do it.
That sounds great. Anyway, so yeah, interesting beer. Like I said, been around since 2015 on Beer Advocate, gets an 86. So it kind of falls right in the middle. It's one of the better session IPAs that I've had. There's a lot of flavor here. The aroma is tangerine, a little bit more tangerine on top of that with some tangerine on the side. Very, very citrus, but more of like a mandarin. Tangerine, you know, that sweeter, you know, those little cuties that you get around Christmas time, that kind of thing. Very, very fruit forward on the nose. Not a lot of hops, a little bit of dankiness, but not much. The flavor for me, bright fruit, big time. There's a little bit of that hop bitterness in there. I mean, obviously it's an IPA, you're going to get that. But it's much more on the lower end of things. And the pairing is so far it's okay. The tangerine is a little bit overpowering. And I imagine if I had this on a fresh palate, it wouldn't be as much. But I think the earthy qualities, the spicy qualities of the cigar, when you're hit with any kind of bright fruit note, your palate's going to gravitate towards that because it's so different. And I don't know if what I just said makes any sense, but it's in my head it does because that's how my palate reacts. If there's a scientific reason behind it, I don't know. But I get, this is just a tangerine bomb for me, which is a good thing. I love a tangerine IPA. So I feel like this is a beer that I really enjoy on its own. The pairing is okay. It's the least of the three that I've had today by far. And I had a fourth beer that I almost brought on. And now that I've seen how everything's gone, I almost wish I did bring it because I feel like it would be a great pairing. It was a hoppy wheat ale from Fort Point, also in San Francisco. It's a fantastic
beers.
Yeah, four beers. It's a fantastic beer. I've only had a handful of the offerings from Fort Point, and they're fantastic. But I think that type of beer, it's got that wheat character, kind of creamy mouthfeel, but it's got a little bit of hoppy note to it. Not too bitter, not too sweet, not too fruity. Just kind of right in that middle range would pair really, really nicely with the cigar. This pairing, the Down to Earth, it's okay, and I'm not mad about it. And, I mean, hell, I'd probably even revisit it if I had these two and I'm sitting around. But I think the other two with less of a fruit note, overly fruity beer, is not going to pair really well with this, with the Liga Maestra.
I just want to remind our audience to tune in to Sharing Our Pairings episode 76, Liga Maestro and Lightweights versus Heavyweights. We're pairing the Liga Maestro with some beers. Rob's gone lightweight. I've gone heavyweight. Thanks very much to all our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners out there in the world. We're doing a double header tonight, Sharing Our Pairings, followed by Cigar Chat. It's going to be an interesting night. So talking a little bit about my beer, the Old Dub 18, which has been, it's an Imperial Stout that's aged in an ex-Highland Park 18 cask. And what's interesting is having this beer on its own, I get so much of that whiskey influence, like just gobs of whiskey influence. And yet when paired with a cigar, I'm getting a lot of fruit. I'm getting almost a like a hint of a pear peach without the cloying sweetness. So that sort of core, really fruit quality. And I think that's the core of a Highland Park 18. If you can really taste the Highland Park 18, you can really get a lot of that fruity character in there. So it's interesting to me that on its own, this beer had a ton of that whiskey influence, but paired with the cigar, that whiskey influence is really struggling to keep up with the cigar. And I think really just a testament to how full-bodied and how much complexity there is in this cigar. Fortunately, this beer does kind of save the pairings of the night, because even though certainly the Stone Brewing was an excellent beer, and there's some people in the chat room that said they really enjoy that salted caramel stout from Breakside Brewery, both of those really fell flat for me in pairing here. And I wouldn't say that this Old Dub 18 by any means is a winner. It's just a winner of the crowd that I've put it in tonight. And that's a little disappointing. But I think, you know, we talked about this many, many times in our 2 years on Sharing Our Pairings, that part of the fun here is to try and push the envelope with a pairing and see what works and what doesn't. And I think I can say with utmost confidence, obviously the master blender is correct. A lighter beer is the way to go with this cigar. And I think I would be really interested to do a third show with the Liga Maestro and go with something like a Goza or maybe even a Lambic or possibly even that quad, like a Belgian triple or a Belgian quad. Goza, I'm thinking, or a Lambic, just because it's got, like a Lambic's got so much fruit quality. And I think anything that's got so much fruit forward character would be really interesting with this cigar. But stouts are just not the way to go with this cigar. And it's a little disappointing, but I'm enjoying the Old Dub, and I'm going to continue to enjoy the Old Dub while you talk about your last pairing again.
It's funny, if I don't know if the audience can see my screen when you're talking, but you started talking about Lambics and Gozas, and I'm shaking my head no. I'll tell you why. And I wouldn't go with anything overly hoppy either. This IPA, it's the more that I sip it, the more I'm getting that fruit, that the hot bitterness is coming out, and I'm getting more of that, and I'm liking the pairing less and less as it goes.
Oh wow!
The Mombacho Liga Maestro is not a candidate for an IPA show. I don't think it's a candidate for anything that's too fruit forward. When you start talking about Belgians, and I'm backtracking a little bit on what I said earlier, because the Cali Coast that I had earlier does have a little bit of fruitiness to it, but it's a more benign fruit. Yeah, it's got that kind of a guava, and I don't know if guava is the right thing, or passion
fruit. Soft fruit?
Yeah, like even a cantaloupe, like a kind of a softer, sweeter, fruity characteristic to it. So it's not citrusy, it's not tart by any means, and that is what really worked well here, I thought, and that just kind of brightened things up and was really more of a palate cleanser. if you go with something that's overly tart, tangerine or pineapple, or and a lot of the notes you're going to get out of really hoppy beers, it's just not working for me. It might work for you, and if you guys are out there and you've tried that pairing and you like it, you know, say that I'm wrong and whatever. But for me, anything too hoppy, anything too fruity, not so much. You start talking about Belgian doubles, triples, quads, sure, we give that a shot. And this beer is strong enough, or the beer, this cigar is strong enough to stand up to a quad, I think, depending on, you know, what it is. If you start getting into barrel-aged quads, I think it's going to get too crazy. Yeah. But I would like to revisit it. Like I said, we could, you know, September this fall or something with some with some Oktoberfests and some Marzens and that kind of thing. I think there might be something going there. If we went in the direction of more of a Belgian style, I think there might be something there, or a Hef style. But nothing with any fruit added. I would say nothing with that's overly hoppy by any means. So yeah, this last pairing for me was a total miss. I'm looking back and I'm trying to decide which beer I want to go back to, and I think it's probably going to be the Cali Coast Kolsch here, because I think that's probably my pairing of the night.
Which was that beer number one for you?
That was beer number one for me.
So for me, I think the Old Dub 18 is the only one that really rescues my pairings for tonight. Again, I think, you know, I've just really taken these pairings in a different direction, and unfortunately the heavyweights are going down for the count. The Old Dub 18 is the winner, if only because, you know, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. The Old Dub is an amazing beer. In fact, I picked up like 2-3 of each of the 12, 18, and 16 because they've got so much character. Really, really enjoy them. And I think with a different cigar, they would go well. But, you know, I think Claudio said it, and, you know, we're disregarding his advice, or at least I'm disregarding his advice.
You did.
I did. I mean, why would I listen to a guy who knows everything there is to know about tobacco? What? No, so, the you know, stouts is just not the way to go. Whiskeys, for sure. Rums, for sure. Wines, maybe. And I think, you know, we definitely need to have a third show, and I think we can probably twist Claudio's rubber arm and have him back on the show to do a follow-up beer pairing with a slightly different style, certainly in a lighter style than the stouts, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I was exchanging emails with Claudio this morning, and I let him know about the show. And he actually expressed interest of coming on, and he asked when it was, and he's actually in a meeting right now, so he couldn't join us. But, you know, Claudio's a big fan of what we do. We're a big fan of what he does, so it works out. But, yeah, I mean, I think this there's a handful of cigars that we can continue to revisit on the show, and some that we've revisited multiple times already, including this, including the Cuatro Cinco from Hoya, and they happen to be really, really, really good cigars.
Yeah.
So in a way, it's those shows are a bit self-serving for us because they're cigars that we love and we get to, I don't know, play around with them a little bit more than just doing one quick show. So it is nice to be able to explore the products that you like. What are we? I know we've got some other stuff coming up soon. What do we have? What do we have next week?
I don't think we've got anything on the calendar. I kind of unfortunately fell flat. I got so excited booking all the guests, and then the reality of June, July hit, and I kind of fell a little flat with booking. So we're a little freeform. We might have to do a return to bourbon or whiskey. I think we've probably got enough time, hopefully, to do a post-embargo or post-prohibition cocktail show before the IPCPR. We're really only 3 weeks away here. In fact, really only 2.5 weeks away. So we've essentially got two regular shows before the IPCPR, and then the third show would fall right in the middle of the IPCPR. So we'll probably have to do a pre-record. But I'm thinking, you know, as much as I enjoy the beer pairing, and I do, we might have to switch things up a little bit, go with the post-prohibition cocktails, and maybe go back to some of the Japanese whiskey before we hit the show. I know we've one of the cigars I've been eager to try, and it's been sitting in my humidor for some time, is that Macanudo Jamaica. We haven't paired that in quite a long time. And that was one of those cigars that kind of, I feel like it flew under the radar. I didn't hear a lot of bloggers talking about it. Didn't see a lot of people raving about it. We really enjoyed it. It did really well in our pairings. I think we featured it twice. We've also got the Fable cigars, which we need to do a second pairing on. And of course, the Old Standby, which is the Oktoberfest cigar. Kind of excited to go back to that one and shake things up and see what we can do. So we've got some options before the IPCPR for sure.
Yeah, and the Oktoberfest 2016 is coming up too, so that'll be nice. I mean, we're looking ahead. I was actually looking on. I'm in a couple of different beer groups on Facebook, and guys like to post pictures of, you know, here's today's haul or whatever, much like they do with cigars. And this guy bought 3 cases of Sam Adams Oktoberfest.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, bro, like, where did you find that left over from last year? He's like, no, it's the new one. It's already out. How is that even possible?
Yeah, that's strange, because I would think the earliest the Oktoberfest should be out would be first
August.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, it's funny. We talk about August like it's so far away. It's three weeks away.
Yeah.
It's scary. It's like, I'm going to start seeing Christmas decorations in the store soon. I'm starting to sound like an old guy. anyway, yeah, just to wrap up, with this Liga Maestro, I really do think, going on the lighter side, obviously the pairings were better tonight. I think that we could revisit this fall with I want to revisit it this fall with some Oktoberfest beers. Actually, we could probably do that next week because they're already out.
There you go. Yeah, so, of course, like I said, we've got a doubleheader tonight, so make sure to tune in tonight for Gurkha. That'll be an interesting show. I think I'll be filling the shoes of cranky MFN CEO, so that'll be interesting. I'll do my best to come up with some hard-hitting questions, even though I'm supposed to be a conscientious Canadian. I'll see if I can get some hard-hitting questions. I'm sure the audience will have some good ones in there, too. Thanks, everyone who's tuned in to Sharing Our Pairings, episode 76. Thanks, of course, to all our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners, wherever you are in the world. Hope you are staying safe. Hope you've been entertained by our 58 minutes of cigar pairing and beer pairing. And we'll see you next week with another Sharing Our Pairings. As we always say, drink better, but drink less. And we're fucking back.
Yeah, why not? Showing off the new SigFed ring. I like that.
Boom. Get some.
That's high quality, dude.
I feel like I put this ring on and I feel like I'm walking around with a roll of quarters in my left hand. Like, I kid you not, this thing is so heavy. I was laughing when you were like, yeah, if we're in a scrap down in Vegas, John's going up front. And I was like, yeah, no doubt. Like, I feel like this is like loaded gloves. Like, I could deck someone with this and just lay them out just as a matter of course with the weight of this ring. But very impressed. It came out really nice. It's something I kind of wanted for a while, and got that summertime bonus from all the stores we've been opening, so decided to spend a little bit of that loot on a fancy ring before the IPCPR. Plus, I can't really wear it. You know, it's considered not debonair to wear any of my manufacturer rings to the IPCPR, so what better than to show off the SigFed bling?
Yeah, absolutely. Where did you... I know that's custom-made, right?
Mm-hmm. There's a guy named Brock Jackson. And I think Brock is actually, and Brock will probably flame me if I get this wrong, but I feel like Brock's the guy that did all the Drew Estate Undercrown rings. And I think he did all the Drew Estate rings. But he's got a really cool thing. He does all the silver casting and stuff himself. It's kind of fun to watch. He's got a little video of heating up the silver and then putting it in the cast. And it's a pretty cool operation. You send him the logo, they do it up in CAD, you know, they make sure that the design is what you want, and then he just goes out and makes it. And props to him, because I was worried that I wasn't going to get this ring in time for the show, but he delivered it well in time for the show, even though we were faced with a strike, it's a postal lockout here, because there's a bit of an issue with Canada Post and the parent company, so all of our packages are going to be on hold probably until after the IPCPR, which is kind of a drag, but that's just how it goes. So he managed to get it to me in time for the show, so I'm excited, and obviously, you know, we are right up against it with the IPCPR, and I've been kind of, I mean, we're off topic from pairing, but I've been pretty excited. I've been playing around with my gear, and I've been playing around with audio and just kind of tweaking and dialing it in. And I just, you know, my goal is to go into the show, and I just want everyone to watch and listen to the content and just go, wow. You know, like, I can't believe you've managed to improve it over the quality of 2015, because I feel like we really knocked it out of the park last year.
Yeah, John posted, you posted that review, right? That video review I watched earlier?
No, that's not posted till next week, but I think people are going to be like, damn, son, you ugly.
Yeah, I'm not saying, yeah, because you're ugly. I'm saying, yeah, because when you guys see the quality of this video, it's pretty impressive. And I'm looking at it, I'm thinking, man, you guys are going to be able to count the white hairs in my beard.
Yeah.
And the lines, the smile lines around my eyes because I'm so happy. I'm a little bit concerned. We're going to need to have someone on, need a makeup crew now to soften these looks. But it's going to be fun. And the quality of that camera is awesome, man. The lens, I should say. That's impressive.
And in we're way off topic, but whatever. It's our After Dark segment. I went with a follow focus, which, you know, the challenge when you're doing video is you have to do manual focus. You really have to dial in manual focus. And I didn't have a lot of experience with manual focus. It's really tough, and it's difficult when you're managing a lot of things at the show and everything's going really quick. You've got a very small time frame to do an interview. Everything needs to be dialed in quickly, and so adjusting the focus ring on the lens itself is kind of awkward. So I got a follow focus, which essentially a follow focus is a dial on the side. It allows you to dial in the ring a little bit tighter, so you can really get that tack sharp focus. And really, that's what I'm going for. Is, you know, we're going to have 1080p video this year. We had 720p last year. We're going to have 1080p this year. So if you really want to see high res video, you'll see it. And like I said, I'm expecting between the lens and the follow focus, the quality is just going to be super tack sharp. They're going to be counting nose hairs, no joke.
Well, I'll make sure that mine are trimmed nicely. And maybe I'll get some Just for Men for my wisdom colored whiteness here.
No, it adds respectability. You know,
no, I got it. Yeah, you got to keep it. You got to keep it. I'll just get it trimmed. You know, keep it trimmed. Keep it tight. But yeah, it's going to be fun, man. And it is literally right around the freaking corner. And I know I didn't use literally correct there, but anyway, yeah, it's going to be. I had a conversation today with a manufacturer that I won't name. And it really did put things into perspective about how much new shit we're going to see.
I mean, if you've been paying attention, like Matt, God bless Matt, because Matt has been on top of the news releases.
Seriously, I get them in my email and I forward them to Matt. And within a minute or two, they're up. I don't know how he does it. I know he gets most of the press releases that I get anyway. So yeah. I'm just sending something to him that he already has. But even the ones I know he's not getting because they were sent directly to me. And he gets them up quick style, and he's getting plugging in the photos and doing all that. So it's thankless work, and I've never actually thanked him for that. So he does a bang up job getting that done for sure.
Well, and I think you look at the number of news releases we've had on a daily basis. I think we're hitting 5 or 6 news releases of new stuff that's coming out because it's got to come out for the show. If you want it, it's got to be before that date of August 8th, which is the drop dead date. Even someone like Steve Sacca, who just released the Sober Mesa last year, and Steve today, I think it was yesterday and today, has like two new releases.
Yeah, two or three releases. Yeah.
It's just, I mean, I think conservatively, there's probably going to be 600 new cigars at the show, and
it's going to be more.
Yeah, there's going to be more, and I was talking to some Fed heads trying to figure out how I'm going to get these cigars back for review, and it's like, even if I can get 200 cigars back for cigar samples and pairing and all this different stuff we do, there's just no way I can smoke all that stuff. Like, unless I'm smoking every single day of the week and we're posting 5-6 reviews a week individually, we're not going to get through it. Like, it's going to take 2 years to get through all the new stuff.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And it's funny that you say it's going to take 2 years to get through it because that's about how long that stuff's going to be available.
Yeah.
So we actually have a pretty big and long window to get that stuff reviewed, which is nice. And I a lot of it is going to be more announced, and it only has to be available at one location. And available is an interesting word. There's so much gray area with, I think there's going to be a ton of announced releases. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cigars are going to be announced and maybe not available. They'll be available at whoever tobacconist in Idaho, the week of August 1st. You know, I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of cigars announced and quote-unquote released that aren't even ready yet. And they won't be for a while, but this is just me speculating. But I know that's what I'd do, and I'd be really, really vague on what the blend is.
Well, and I think you nailed it a couple episodes ago. You said everyone's five-year plan is being compressed into a 75-day plan. And that's no joke. Like, even I was tuning into Riste, who is on Stogie Geeks, and Riste's got one release. You know, he hit the market with one release. And I think he said he's got three cigars planned for the IPCPR. And that's really, that's a factor of, if you've got that cigar in your five-year plan and you want that cigar to be out, in the current market, you're going to have to release it at the IPCPR. That is your choice. So I'm glad that we've got two video crews, because I feel like even with two video crews, even with pumping out constant content, there's still going to be a ton of stuff we can't cover because we simply won't have the time. I mean, I feel like the IPCPR, because I think I was looking at the schedule, and most days they're open at 10 in the morning and close at 5 at night, and I feel like they need to extend that. Like, they need to start at 8 in the morning because there's not enough time at the show to possibly cover all these manufacturers and all these releases.
It's going to be interesting. And it wouldn't surprise me if we were to walk into the booth of a larger retailer, larger manufacturer, one of the big guys, and there's just a table, right? And I this is just me making this up, because I don't know how else you would display 110 new releases, but just this long table with the, you know, just like different, like 100 tiny displays just saying, here's this one, here's this one, here's this one, here's this one. I don't have samples of them yet, but they're all going to be available by August. And there's 110 cigars there. That would not surprise me from one manufacturer.
Well, and I think the bigger manufacturers, this is going to be their time where, you know, and we were kind of, before this whole FDA thing hit, we were kind of going in with a strategy of what's old is new. And I think especially for the bigger manufacturers, that couldn't be more true, because they're going to have to go back to their portfolio from 2005, 2006 and say, well, this was a limited edition, but if we want this cigar, if we want facings, that's going to have to be a regular production, and you're going to have it out for the IPCPR. And I think we're going to see a lot of stuff that was maybe a one-off or maybe a limited run for a particular B&M. That cigar is going to be out for the IPCPR, I guarantee it. So, you know, like, you're not kidding. Like, we could see 100 cigars from some of the larger manufacturers, because they've got to go through their portfolio and say, anything that we've ever had on the market, that's got to be out. We got to re-release it and put it out.
Absolutely. And we could talk about this for hours. Mm-hmm. And so we'll just move forward. But I was thinking that, you know, when we had Jason Holly on, and he was the one who said his 10-year plan was compacted into, you know, 7 weeks or whatever. And he's got 10 cigars that he's releasing. And to me, that sounded like a gigantic number. It's not. It's not. There's going to be, I think 50 releases from some companies is going to be kind of a standard number. It's going to be nuts.
Now, the only downside of that, of course, is that there's going to be some good releases, but there's going to be some not so good releases. So I feel like, you know, the benefit for Cigar Federation is that because we've been kind of creeping up on some of the, I think it was 2015, 2016 was a really good couple of years for releases. I think a lot of the product that was coming out, especially from boutique manufacturers, was really, really top shelf. Guys who were first on the market releasing cigars that, you know, would really be a third year release from a company that's got that experience, and they were coming out of the gate with that. So it'll be interesting to see how some of that product, whether, you know, we say, well, this cigar just wasn't ready for the market, frankly, like, it's obviously rushed, and some stuff that will be ready for the market. So it'll be an interesting shakedown. The year in review show might be 3 hours long when we talk about what's new and what's trending.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a lot of the stuff we're going to talk about in our cigar chat the week before IPCPR, so we can save a lot of that for then. But yeah, it's going to be hectic, man. Where are you walking?
I'm excited that we've got some free time finally in the evenings, where we can get after it at the rum bar. We can get after it at some of the cocktail bars. I want to do some coverage and roll into the Monte Cristo Lounge, some of the new offerings that they've built in Las Vegas. So I want to check that out and get our drink on, as it were.
Yeah, we should do some Snapchatting from IPCPR. I think people would like that. I don't know if I imagine somebody else is Snapchatting from there. I feel like we should too.
Yeah, I think it's going to be like a Twitter Periscope thing, because I was looking at the different technologies that, you know, I don't really support Facebook, so I don't think Facebook is the way to go. But I feel like a Twitter Periscope kind of dealy is the way to go, because it could broadcast to all of the SigFed members out there. We can get a quick and dirty video thing out there. I know some of the manufacturers have been doing it. Fred Rui's been doing it. I know some of the guys from Drew Estate have been doing it. Fabian's been doing it over in Europe. So that'll be kind of fun. We can do like a quick 20-minute show just off our cameras, and that'll be fun.
It doesn't even need to be that long. Just a quick, like, hey, look, the door's just open. We just walked in. You wish you were here, and that's it.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I think that'd be a good idea. I mean, obviously more content than that. Not just like, hey, I'm here and you're not, but that's always kind of fun to say.
Yeah.
But it's like, I'm telling you, man, and we've got a couple people who are joining us this year who I imagine have always wanted to go, and they're going to realize how much fucking work it really is.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the terrible adage of work hard, play hard. Well, in the past, it's just been work hard. I mean, you know, this is really, I think, the first year where we've really striving for that balance, because we do need to work those relationships. We do have relationships with all these manufacturers. We do need to spend some time after the show closes to spend some time talking to them. Not necessarily stuff we're going to post on SigFed, but it's good to understand the pulse of the industry and talk to some of these people we've established these relationships with. You and Logan have, you know, some of these relationships go back 5-6 years. So that, I think, is part of the part. And, of course, being in Las Vegas, I mean, yeah. I'm glad it's back in Las Vegas. Can't say enough about that.
Where the elite meet to eat. Yeah, we got another show coming up, so let's wrap this up.
All right, so thanks very much for everyone who's tuning in live to Sharing Our Pairings episode 76. Thanks to all our podcast listeners. If you have any questions for the show, you can shoot it out to us, surgeon@cigarfederation.com, rob@cigarfederation.com. Appreciate you tuning in every week. We'll be back next week with something interesting and entertaining. And as we say on Sharing Our Pairings, drink better, but drink less.